You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Live broadcast of TPC. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, April the 10th. What a beautiful time of year this is. 1 week after Easter, and we had our busiest show of the year just last week. They've all been busy. It seems exceedingly busy with these special series and how wonderful they've been. Last week, though, of course, we kicked off Confederate History Month. We had some current news and events with Hendrik Palmgren, a little residual march around the world with Hendrik there, and then of course talked about the resurrection of Christ with Pastor Brett McAtee. All of that was last week's show. It feels as though tonight we'll have a moment at least to catch our breath, relatively speaking, although there's not going to be a wasted minute as we kick our Southern History Month series, Confederate History Month series, into high gear tonight when Gene Andrews, former commander of the Sons of Confederate Veterans and the caretaker of the Nathan Bedford Forrest Boyhood Home, and Dr. Michael Hill, chief of the League of the South, they'll be with us tonight as we kick all of that into high gear, a couple of hours on Confederate history and our Southern forebears tonight. Keith Alexander is with me as always. Keith, how are you, brother?
Doing great, my friend. Really looking forward to tonight's show.
Yes, as you can tell, we always are. Keith is joining us over the phone tonight, and so that's why he doesn't sound like he's in studio, because he's out. But Keith over the phone is better than no Keith at all, and that's the way we want him. Keith, we're going to share some emails.
Can you hear me better now?
No, I hear you fine. We can hear you clear. It's just obviously nothing's going to be as good as being in studio together, and I look forward to getting back with you next week and doing that. But I got this one email I'm going to read that came
can
in from a
me?
Listener, and then we're going to read some. Yes. And we'll read some more emails later in the show, because they have been certainly coming in. And this is from Ralph. Ralph writes, "Dear James and Keith, I want to thank you both for the great work you do for our kith and kin. You're both great warriors fighting our enemies. You remind me of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson."
Hello.
That is probably the highest praise I've ever received. "I pray that God will bless you and keep you strong and safe. I have a request. Can you play the song The Battle Cry for Freedom, Confederate version? You can find it on YouTube on one of your show segments this month for Confederate History Month. Thank you. For Christ, Dixie, Kith and Kin." That's Ralph. And Ralph, indeed, we will, and I'll tell you, my friend, we will play it tonight. The last segment of the show with Dr. Michael Hill, we will play that very song. And thank you for the request. So Keith is trying to call me now, as our producer is trying to call him, so that's not going to work. But in any event, we'll get Keith back on in a moment, we hope. Until then, the show must go on. So this is a very interesting email. I guess the Derek Chauvin trial is the biggest game in town right now with regards to stories or headlines or whatever that we're interested in. And I'd really like to have Keith on to hear this and respond to it from an attorney's point of view. So if we can work to get him back, if he'll quit calling me, we can get through to him. We will. He's calling me on my cell phone, not the studio line. That's why I can't put him up. Anyway, we'll get him back. But there was a very interesting email that came in from Sam Dixon. I'll just read it to you. I'll read what I can from it. "Dear James, I got a call this morning from a lawyer who has been watching the trial on something called Court TV. Well, Sam, I can tell you, I know what Court TV is. At least I used to know what it was. Court TV used to be a cable channel where they would broadcast, well, as you would imagine, famous trials. My grandmother watched the O.J. Simpson trial for so long that it emblazoned the Court TV logo into our TV. No matter what channel you were on, you could see a faint image of the Court TV logo because my grandmother was watching that trial so intently. So I don't know how people get their TV now, if Court TV has found a satellite provider or a streaming service or whatever. But do we have you back on now, Keith?
Yeah, I'm back on, James. I don't know what happened. I guess I'm trying to put it on the speakerphone. I'm just going to have to hold it up to my ear, I guess.
That's the way to do it. All right, buddy, here we go. So this was an email that we got in. Listen to this. This is about the Chauvin trial. I learned some things from this email, so perhaps you will too, and certainly the audience at large. But I'd like for you to respond to this from an attorney's point of view about the Derek Chauvin trial. So an attorney has been watching the trial on Court TV, and he says that the defense is just clobbering the prosecution, and shockingly so. The bought and paid for system police chief testified in support of the prosecution and against his own cop. The defense attorneys have gotten additional videos, though, that have been taken from body cameras on all the cops. And if you watch these videos, which I have never seen before, what the videos show in some ways is more devastating to the prosecution than the one that all of us have seen. For instance, after the chief cop testified in his direct testimony that Chauvin violated the rules, used excessive force, put a knee on Floyd's neck, thereby likely causing his death, and so on and so forth, the defense attorney cross-examined him. And the defense attorney showed the videos from the other police officers' cameras. And here is the news that was, to me, very staggering. The video that was released that we've all seen on the media appears to show that Chauvin had his knee on the back of Floyd's neck. But the video is taken from an angle that distorts the actual position of Chauvin's knee. The other videos show, the videos that were shown in court but not by the media, show that Chauvin's knee was not actually on the neck at all, but rather on the shoulder. And when the defense attorney showed this during the trial to the chief cop there in Minneapolis, the other videos shown from the body cameras, the chief was visibly rattled and said he had never seen them. It seems pretty bad for a police chief to testify in support of a murder conviction for one of his officers without reviewing all of the body camera evidence that the other officers had. Rather, he had only seen what the media had put out there, which, of course, makes it look like Chauvin had done something untoward. So we're scanning the media to see how they are reporting the trial. And as expected, the regime media is singing in chorus in support of the prosecution and against Chauvin beyond any proportion. But this is a devastating cross-examination. And the information about the knee not being on Floyd's neck was almost completely airbrushed, I think entirely airbrushed, out while the journalists cooed over the supposedly fabulous testimony for the prosecution. So even after this evidence, which the media has suppressed, was presented in court, even then, the media refused to make mention of it. So, Keith, take it from there. We're about to come up on our first break, and we'll carry this over into the next segment. But that is incredible news that unless you were watching the trial or in the jury box, you would not have known about.
Well, you know, this really ties into our Confederate History Month segment, too, because basically what people are missing on this is the power of the media. The media can make facts, and that's what they've been doing. I looked at that, even what I saw on mainstream media outlets about the knee on the neck, I could say he's not putting any real pressure on his neck. But that's not being reported, so consequently, the public at large doesn't pick up on it.
Hold on right there, buddy. We're coming up on our first break. It was a little choppy there, but we got you now. We're 5x5. Great to have you, and we'll be right back. We're going to let you take it away.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Everybody, what Keith was mentioning a moment ago, how the coverage of the Chauvin trial dovetails into what he will be talking about in the next hour during our Confederate History Month series, is how the enemy uses public opinion to achieve its aims. And we're going to be comparing the styles of Jefferson Davis and Abraham Lincoln, the two wartime presidents, in this next hour when we resume our Confederate History Month coverage in just a minute. But first, going back to this trial, what Sam Dixon shared with me about the revelations that are coming out of that courtroom is quite telling. I mean, obviously, we know that charges should have never been filed. How do we know that? Well, the county medical examiner, Andrew Baker, said that if Floyd had been found dead in his home or anywhere else, that he would have concluded that this was an overdose death. The media is, of course, very quiet about this. Jared Taylor has written, though, a great article, perhaps even the definitive article. Paul Craig Roberts is doing a great job covering this as well. But Jared wrote in his article for Amran.com, "The White Man Goes on Trial," he wrote, and I quote, "It's an American tradition. The media tells the world the white defendant is guilty. When it turns out that he isn't, people riot because they know better than the jurors. Jurors who saw all the evidence, including the stuff the media didn't talk about." And that is indeed what's happening in court in real time this week, Keith Alexander.
That's exactly it. See, we are seeing this trial, you and I and most of our listeners, through the lens of a normal white juror, okay? And we're trying to remove emotionality from the analysis and look at the facts. You know, just like Sergeant Joe Friday said on the Dragnet series on television back in the 1950s, just the facts, ma'am. You know, that just give me the facts. Well, we look at the facts and we see that the facts definitely don't rise to beyond a reasonable doubt standard, which is the standard of proof to prosecute somebody successfully for a crime in American jurisprudence and in English jurisprudence. But, you know, the jury trial is part of our Anglo-Saxon heritage, and the fewer Anglo-Saxon people, quite frankly, that we have on juries, the more that is liable to have the train jump the tracks, and that's what's happening here. For example, look at the prosecution's presentation. We had 2 days of people emoting, saying, you know, oh, how they've witnessed it and it was just horrible and all, you know, and see, this is a difference. This is a big cultural difference that is being forced on us. And if you don't buy into the black outlook, which is the person that speaks the loudest wins the argument, then you are guilty of systemic racism, institutional racism, and white privilege. Well, that's what's going on now, and it just proves the truth of Marshall McLuhan's theory in his book, The Medium is the Message, that I had to study in college back in the late 60s and early 70s. If you control the medium, you control the message, and that's what the left has done. They are totally in control of the high ground and the major outlets for media in America, and they're giving a alternative analysis to the analysis that a juror in the box would be listening to. And they're constantly cutting in. They're giving their analysis of what's going on every day. When you watch the synopsis, most people can't be tuned into the trial 24/7 or whatnot, so they hear the analysis, and the analysis is that prosecution has a slam dunk case against this horrible racist character, Derek Chauvin, and he needs to fry. Okay, that's what they want to get across. And we have so many cowardly people in positions of authority, like the judge, like the governor, like the mayor of Minneapolis, people like this, that they are willing to throw Derek Chauvin to the dogs, to throw him to the wolves, in order to appease the woke masses. And the woke masses really aren't masses. Somebody pointed out recently that really only about 8% of the American population is woke, but it's 100% of ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, CNN, MSNBC, and all those other alphabet soup outlets of the media. So that's what you're getting. You're finding out that other people's perceptions are the ultimate reality. That's what the new America is like now, and this is why multiculturalism is bound to fail. This is the result of multiculturalism. In the past, everybody in America, including black people and minorities, strove to achieve the level of analysis and cognitive thinking represented by the racial majority of America. Black people, in other words, wanted to be like white people. Now you have the reverse, white people striving to be like black people to prove that they're not racist. And this trial is just the whole process in a microcosm. It's really obvious to anybody that just, you know, goes to the facts and properly applies the burden of proof that you have. This is not a civil trial where just a, you know, bare majority of the evidence favors one side, that's the side you vote for. You have to get, you know, let's say 90-95% or more in favor of the prosecution's arguments and their presentation in order to get a conviction. And there is certainly, the least you can say about this trial is that the proof doesn't meet that standard. I think that the proof probably meets the standard that by beyond a reasonable doubt, Derek Chauvin is not guilty of any of the crimes he's being charged with.
Yes, so I think, Keith, fantastic commentary, by the way. I think the reason we are so interested in this is, again, is Chauvin a proxy for what's coming for all of us? Paul Craig Roberts writes about this. I think you're certainly going to see if he is convicted. And again, the societal pressure, the media pressure, the threats of riots that is being put on these jurors, even if they were reasonable people who wanted to do the right thing. We have no idea if they are or not in this godforsaken country. But the pressure is astounding. And is, in fact, very illegal. I mean, you can't have a fair trial in this case, but all it takes is one, right? So we hope that there's one courageous enough. Paul Craig Roberts is skeptical about that, but he's also saying if you're able to throw this guy under the bus, and charges never should have been filed, and we don't know if Chauvin was a good guy. He could have been an absolute terrible guy, but he's not a murderer. Not in this instant. He says, Paul Craig Roberts wonders, well, are you going to be able to even defend yourself if someone breaks into your home and your attacker is black? Can you defend yourself? And it's certainly going to have a chilling effect on police work. I mean, can you imagine being a cop, either black or white, really, and trying to police blacks at this point? I mean, every weekend it seems as though there's a dozen murders, black-on-black murders in Chicago, but there's nobody talking about that. I mean, can you imagine what effect this is going to have on the morale of police officers, which has already been so devastated through the Black Lives Matter riots of last year? Can you just imagine what the future of policing is going to look like in this country? Really, as it stands, I mean, there's already been enough damage to that, but a murder conviction for this guy, I think, would send it over the top. Already, people are already not going to want to go in and police these communities because they don't want to end up on trial with their life hanging in the balance, and the media is the judge and jury and executioner. But, yes, these are the ramifications above and beyond this one case that so interests us here on this program.
Well, there's two facets that we need to focus on right now. One, what effect is this having on the police? And two, what effect is this having on the average American citizen and his Second Amendment right to bear arms and to defend himself and his family? Well, let's take the second one first. As for people, we know how this plays out. Look at what has happened in South Africa. People wonder why all these people out on these farms who are armed to the teeth allow themselves and their families to be hacked to death with machetes. Well, it's because they know that if they kill one of the attackers, they're going to be judged by a black jury, arrested by a black cop, judged by a black judge, and they're going to wind up dead.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. We're going to take a break. Is South Africa-style justice, South Africa-style courts coming? Are they already here? That's what we're talking about.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
As allegations of sexual assault emerge from a child holding facility in Texas, Vice President Kamala Harris continued to draw criticism Wednesday about her absence from the U.S.-Mexico border region and for not facing reporters about her role as President Biden's border czar. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley on Fox News.
It's really unacceptable that Biden is so obsessed with Trump reversals that he'll literally put the American public and these kids at risk the way he is.
Neither Biden nor Harris have announced plans to visit the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. Iranian state media on Wednesday praised Iran's 25-year, $400 billion cooperation agreement with China as a good geopolitical game changer. That positioned Beijing as leading the effort to drag the United States back into the Iran nuclear deal. Thank you kindly for listening. We do appreciate it. We are USA Radio News.
Could an ancient mystery be determining the events of our time? Could it reveal the secret of our future? Are recent events a warning that we are approaching judgment? How much time do we have left? Author Jonathan Cahn releases the book that reveals what could not be revealed until now. His newest New York Times bestseller, The Harbinger 2, The Return, embark on an epic journey to uncover the mysteries and revelations that are changing the world and will change your life. Available online and wherever fine books are sold.
Let me get right back to you. Sandra, those banners come out tonight. Can you pack them?
Indeed. And those unexpected growth can stretch your business thin.
On machine four?
Like at Monica's print shop. To fulfill orders on time, she needs to get started hiring right away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. And the moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's get a COVID vaccination update with Tim Berg from the Phoenix, USA Radio News Bureau.
Even as Americans receive vaccinations, parts of the United States are seeing a troubling surge in COVID cases. This is especially true for the upper Midwest and Northeast. Michigan is struggling with a strong spike. As these new variants spread across the United States, many people are wondering if the vaccines are able to protect people from them. Dr. Ajish Jha is the dean of Brown University School of Public Health. He tells NBC's Today Show,
"It is early. We don't know that much about it. All the data we have right now suggests our vaccines are going to hold up. So I remain confident, but obviously we want to test that and make sure that that is the case. But I think our vaccines are going to hold up to these mutants.
Climate guru John Kerry says greater transparency about firms' climate risk and new tax incentives would drive significant amounts of new investment to help solve climate-related problems. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen spoke on Tuesday, said the Biden administration's general plan is to align tax policy with climate change goals. USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Dear James and Keith, thank you for all the work you have done in delivering real news and fresh, insightful commentary. Thank you also for boldly and defiantly standing up and again for being there and taking the risks and making the sacrifices that you do. Thank you again and best regards. That comes from a listener in Wilmington, Delaware, Keith. Yes, indeed, TP Nation is everywhere. And, of course, ever much thanks and praise and appreciation our audience could possibly have for us, we return it to them tenfold, especially after the last month, our first quarter fundraising drive, this time without the ability to process online contributions. They responded so powerfully, and we will need that going forward. Indeed, I can't tell you how important it is. You hear something you like, remember the tip jar, and you're going to have to send in a check because we are facing, of course, an enemy that is as determined as we are to win the day. But we're going to believe in it the most, and we're going to believe in it the longest. But thank you, my friend in Delaware, for the note. And as we continue on tonight, Keith, I mean, there are other news stories, of course, that are worthy of our attention here on TPC. We've been very busy with the March Around the World, of course, Confederate History Month, and it seems as though we keep coming back to this one because, again, of the reasons we have stated earlier and for reasons we have not yet stated, this is such an important case, and it goes far beyond Derek Chauvin and George Floyd, obviously. But we can continue on, Keith, if you'd like, or if there's anything else in the news you've been monitoring that you think we should make some time for. We have to shift gears and put on our Confederate kepi in the next hour. What do you think?
Well, I think let me finish up on that thought. I said that there are two aspects to what the reaction will be if Derek Chauvin is convicted, which is obviously what the mainstream media is pitching for. That's what they want. We first of all said the people and their right to bear arms and the right to defend themselves and their families. And we pointed to South Africa, where you have farmers that are armed to the teeth that wind up getting hacked to death with machetes, both them and their families. The reason is they know that the whole law enforcement mechanism or hierarchy over there in South Africa is run by blacks. And that if they kill a black, they're basically going to suffer a slow death. They're going to be prosecuted. They're going to be arrested by a black policeman, taken before a black judge or a black jury, found guilty by them, thrown into a jail run by black administrators, and, you know, their life is gone. So what they do is, just like people here in the South, a lot of people, despite all of this wokeness, white people and black people tend to get along together in their interpersonal business relationships and otherwise, and even social relationships. So they try to talk the mob out of hacking them to death, and it may work 4 out of 5 times, but on that fifth time when it doesn't work, you and your family are dead. So that's one thing. People, this will have a chilling effect on people exercising their Second Amendment rights. Now, what about the police? Well, the police, like you said, are probably going to wind up leaving police in heavily black jurisdictions like the city of Memphis. They're going to transfer out or take a job in the white suburbs like Collierville or Arlington or South Haven, Mississippi, or something like that. Well, then there's an analogy to be drawn to the military. When Obama became president, he set about systematically replacing our warrior generals and admirals with social warrior generals and admirals. And that's why there was no way that Trump was going to try to challenge the election effectively, because the military would have been against him. You know, just look at what you're hearing from the military now. Well, the police in places like Memphis are going to be black. They're going to be like the South African model that we were talking about. And you're going to be white people further and further out into the hinterlands. You know, you're not going to get a level playing field in the media even unless, for example, the political cesspool becomes the equivalent of 60 Minutes with the same funding and the same reach. Because they control the media, because they control the institutions a la cultural Marxism that set cultural values, the cultural value war is being lost. It has been lost ever since Brown versus Board of Education by white people in America. And what's happening now is we're getting close to ending. They are basically locking it down and making it where whites are going to be the perpetual underclass in America. And Derek Chauvin, the fact that a white policeman can't effectively arrest a black suspect who is obviously resisting arrest and resisting it mightily, that tells you that what white person in their right mind would want to subject themselves to that type of jeopardy? And my answer is none.
Keith, there's one more thing that I don't think we've mentioned in talking about this case that is that should be remembered, and that is for all the people who have been trotted up to the stand this week, the observers, the witnesses, the so-called witnesses who were there at the time of the incident, and they're the ones coming up here and hollering as if George Floyd was their son or that they knew him for longer than the 10 minutes that they were there on the sidewalk with him. You know, if they hadn't been hurling curse words and threatening Derek Chauvin while he was keeping Floyd subdued, perhaps he would have had a better opportunity to monitor the suspect. But you have multiple threats surrounding this police officer, yelling obscenities, video recording him, yelling threats. And so that's something that would certainly be distracting as well. But again, George Floyd was talking about the fact that he couldn't breathe before any of this. And we know that now as the facts begin to get fleshed out. And, of course, this is what you do with a witness that is disruptive and uncooperative. You have to keep them down. You have to keep them calm. You have to make sure that they're not a threat while you're also surveying these other potential threats on the sidewalk. And so all that comes into play as well. But in any event, I don't know what more we can say about it right now. But I wonder, you know, we were talking about Court TV and O.J. Simpson, and it seemed as though that trial lasted for a year. I surely it couldn't have, but I don't know how long the O.J. Simpson trial lasted, but it seemed like it lasted a hell of a long time. They're saying that this one may be wrapped up in a month or less, Keith. I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Well, look, it's like water on a rock. They've worn it down. The manly efforts that were made in previous trials, like the one with Rodney King, where the jury got the right decision, are becoming history. They're becoming more and more difficult to accomplish because of the media. The media is a villain in this whole thing. And about those witnesses, see, those witnesses should not have been allowed to testify. All they were basically character witnesses for the accused. The accused is not on trial here. Derek Chauvin is. The focus should be on the defendant. And I'm sure they wouldn't have allowed to have a parade of witnesses telling what a jolly good fellow Derek Chauvin was. And again, this is a cultural difference. Like I said, the way that black people win arguments is who shouts the loudest. He who talks the loudest and talks the most wins, not the quality of their arguments or their deductive reasoning or inductive reasoning or whatever. That doesn't matter. That doesn't factor in. If we're emotional, then you need to respect that. That is what they're telling the so-called white judicial system. You've got to give respect to our emotionality, and if our emotionality is greater than your emotionality, we win.
All right, there are some other things going on in the country that I think are quite interesting, and it has to do with woke corporations and woke sports leagues. We talked, I think we just mentioned it in passing last week, that the Major League Baseball is removing its All-Star game from Atlanta and moving it to Colorado. Well, now that's interesting because Atlanta is pretty much deep blue now. The rest of rural Georgia is quite red, but we know that with regards to elections, the state teeters on a knife's edge. But baseball is moving it out of Atlanta because the state legislature and the governor of Atlanta had the audacity to insist that you be alive and you be who you say you are and can prove it before you vote. Now, that's a whole lot different than literacy tests and all the other things that they said used to keep blacks from being able to vote. They're not doing anything to suppress the vote of the black community. They just want to make sure that people, only registered voters of the state of Georgia, are voting. And MLB takes up their rocks and they move to Colorado. And Delta releases this statement. They have a big hub, of course, in Atlanta. Delta releases this statement condemning the new legislation there. And the governor, who's not a friend of ours, I mean, the Kemp, the Republican governor of Georgia, is a cuck, and he's certainly not one of us. But he did seemingly slap Delta with some sanctions. He's taken away millions of dollars worth of tax subsidies. So, anyway, percolate on that, Keith, and we'll bring it back to you right at the top of the next segment.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Covering all the news that's Fit to Speak. You're listening to The Political Cesspool, James Edwards and Keith Alexander. We received so many heartfelt letters and cards and handwritten notes and emails, of course. We got one from Brazil that I've got to share with you. We may do that one next week, though, Keith, when you're back in the studio with me. But how about this one? A guy sent us a contribution on his birthday. Now, normally it's the other way around. The birthday boy is the one that is the recipient of gifts. But no, that's how our audience is. They remember us even on their special days. Dear TPC, enclosed is a donation to keep up the good fight. Today is my birthday, and I thought no better way than share some love with a check to my favorite talk radio program. Keep strong and all the best. And that comes from Jules down in Florida. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. And I love this one, Keith. It's a contribution, and it came with a note. And a note is just a Bible verse. And it says, John 3:21. This verse made me think of the TPC crew. And he didn't include the Bible verse, so I went and looked it up. And this is what it reads. Whoever lives by truth comes into light, so that it may be seen. Oh, my goodness. I can't read my own writing. How embarrassing is that? Well, let me just look it up again. Hold on. This just, you know what? I'm doing this on purpose to prove we're live on the radio tonight. But John 3:21. But whoever lives by truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. And he says that's a verse this listener says makes him think of us. Well, folks, we love you. We are here together. We are a family. We're a family through the ups and the downs and the miles and the years. And here we go again. But, Keith, we were talking about just some other news items that have caught my eye this week. And that is the fact that Major League Baseball is moving the All-Star game out of Colorado because of the voting law. God forbid you have to be alive and a legitimate resident of the state of Georgia to be able to vote. And in response to that, I don't know who they're punishing. This is the case of you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. They're punishing Atlanta, which is majority black, majority Democratic. So that's interesting. And then the Georgia governor, who's by no means lion-hearted, did strike back at Delta, who stood with the MLB in this decision and against one of its hubs there in Georgia, and said, we're going to strip away your tax incentives. And so anyway, I think... Keith, I keep saying this. I keep waiting for it to happen, but I still believe it. I just think the sheer weight of the absurdity of woke culture will cause it to collapse, and we'll be here to see it.
Well, I certainly hope so, but again, the real key is for the political cesspool to become funded and have the same reach as 60 Minutes. See, as long as the left is in charge of the media, the medium is the message, and other people's perceptions are the ultimate reality. Now, going back to this situation with the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, again, they're playing on old stereotypes. Of course, Jim Crow is going to be associated in the minds of simple-minded liberals with the South, and Atlanta is the South, and this is just another chance for the South to become what George Wallace said it was back in the day, the national whipping boy. But in truth, if you look at the voting laws in Colorado, which apparently is a good and righteous place that they have now moved the Major League Baseball All-Star Game to, they're more restrictive and less conducive to remote, non-in-person voting than Georgia's voting laws. And furthermore, Joe Biden's home state of Delaware doesn't even allow mail-in voting of any type. You have to show up on election day. Now, you know, talk about Jim Crow, and Delaware was a slave state at the eve of the Civil War. They didn't have a lot of slaves, but they were still officially a slave state. Why aren't any of these people being castigated, or why aren't any of these states and municipalities being castigated like Atlanta and Georgia are being castigated? Well, it's because they have a narrative. You know, South bad, non-South good, or North good. And they're playing that fiddle as furiously as they can. They always do. Don't confuse them with the facts. But, you know, I really would like to see Kemp say, why don't you, if you don't like Georgia and our politics, Major League Baseball, basketball, football, don't let the door hit you in the ass when you leave. Go. I would like nothing more than for professional sports in America to all go bankrupt. What's going to happen if they're just supported by the few 8% of woke people and black people? Well, all these $100 million a year salaries are going to go down to $100,000 if they're lucky, okay? They're going to ruin their, they will have killed their golden goose. And I can think of nothing better. We put sports on way too high a pedestal in America and in the Western world. These people are, it's like movie stars. These people basically aren't as intelligent as the average American, but they presume to pontificate to us about what we ought to think and what we ought to feel and what our laws ought to be. And I'm tired of hearing ignoramuses pontificating at me. And I really think we would have a better society if we went back to the 50s when NFL linemen were making $10,000 a year.
Yeah, well, yeah, that would be great. I know what you're talking about. LeBron James is a philosopher now. And, of course, you know, they all act like they're counterculture revolutionaries. They are the culture. I mean, they stand in line with every major corporation. Like, here's every media outlet, they're not fighting the system. They are the system. They're too stupid to see it. But how about this one? We were talking about Delta just a moment ago in Atlanta, standing with the MLB against this, you know, hateful, racist, you have to be alive to vote law that the Georgia legislature passed. Well, here's United. I mean, as Brad Griffin wrote this week, the real world has really become a cartoon. Now, this is where it's getting very dangerous. If there's one profession, I'll give you two, where I want the best and most qualified person to be the one that gets the position, it's a surgeon or a pilot. And United Airlines has just rolled out this new woke initiative where, over the course of the next couple of years, they are going to hire 2,500 black and female pilots. Now, listen, hey, again, I'm all for best man for the job gets the job. If we stuck to that, whites would do just fine. I wouldn't worry about it. But when you're putting people who may not be the most qualified or capable into a position of an airline pilot just to fulfill some arbitrary diversity, gender, racial quotas, that is absolute. Number one, it's sick. It's dangerous. This is one of those social equity issues that everybody has become so obsessed about, but they are the extremists. No one in our circles is so extreme as to do something this dangerous. And we have a positive sense of racial and ethnic identity. Yes, we're proud of who we are here, but we don't make everything about identity up to the point where it's even more important than being qualified to do the most high-risk jobs like fly airplanes. I mean, I'm telling you, folks, if you've got United miles, you might want to switch over to another carrier. Maybe they'll all do this. Maybe I saw where Lauren Witzke, the former we were just talking about, Delta, Delaware. Lauren Witzke, the former Republican nominee for United States Senate out of Delaware, who was on this show earlier this year, saying she would drive to California before she got onto a plane where she wasn't confident the most qualified person was in the cockpit. And I had a private pilot's license for a while. And let me tell you, it's difficult to become a pilot, even putting around in Cessna 152, 172s. A lot of math, a lot of stuff that, hey, listen, there's nobody stopping blacks and women from being pilots, by the way. By the way, I mean, why aren't they there? Because they don't excel in that particular field. Just like I couldn't win a 100-yard dash, all right? But, Keith, with 2 minutes remaining, this is probably the most jarring of all of the advancements in radical egalitarianism. It's really gone beyond the emperor has no clothes now to where we will kill you for equity, no matter what.
Well, it's a general retreat from meritocracy. Meritocracy has no place in modern American or Western life or European life. We're supposed to basically surrender our safety and the welfare of ourselves and our children and our wives and spouses and whatnot to sacrifice them to the false god of political correctness, as you have stated it many times. This is, you know, and I guess they're going to try to do things by automation. Like they talk about having driverless 18-wheel trucks driving down the expressway. I guess they were going to have the same thing on airplanes. But then remember, if you will, that plane crash in the Indian Ocean of the jet, the 737, I believe it was, that Boeing has put out, in which the pilot could not override the computer automatic pilot. And as a result, the plane crashed. You know, they don't have automation down. They need meritocracy. They don't care about meritocracy if the result... See, what is driving all of this wokeness is the profound humiliation and frustration that the left feels regarding the failure of the civil rights movement to deliver on its promises. Black people still can't seem to get their cart out of the ditch, despite affirmative action and all the other preferences they get, and they're going to say opportunities aren't enough, we have to have equal outcome.
That's it. Equal outcomes is what it is. Not equal opportunity, but equal outcomes. And that's where you start playing with people's lives in situations like this. We got to take a break. Confederate History Month continues. Keith Alexander going to break down the two presidents, Davis and Lincoln.